Today, we revisit the Why Men Don't Talk episode from Series 1. In this episode, me and Sean discuss the stages of grief that we experienced through our own fertility journeys and why we think it's so hard for men to ask for help. If you're struggling or know someone who is, this episode might just give you or them the confidence to talk. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. Hi, I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode. Hello everyone. Hi, Kieran. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. I'm really good. It's a bit nippy up here. The weather's changed, so we're all getting used to it. It's dropped a few degrees. It was like -5 last night or something. So,
we're up north.
Up north, mate. I tell you, people think, like when I talk to my friends down south, they think I'm joking. It's always a few degrees colder up here. Always. Mm. Which makes sense because it's further north. But you don't notice it until you kind of drive down south and go, oh, it's nice. It's a bit warmer here. Yeah.
Well, the main benefit of whatever the weather is doing, your plants are doing really well. That's becoming a bit of a topic. But
hey, mate.
But you've got, mate, I'm sure you've got an extra one now.
Yeah, I've got a new one. Do you like it?
Yeah. Mate, it's just literally, I think give it a couple more episodes, you're just going to be like live broadcasting from the jungle.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a shelf up behind me and I'm going to get little ones on there. I like growing, nice. You know, I like the greenery. I like being outside. So if I could bring that indoors, I find it helps calm me, you know, just having plants around. Don't know why, but it does.
No, I think it's the Japanese have a term called Shinrin-yoku, which is nature bathing. And they actually like recommend it to people if they're kind of feeling stressed or whatever, get in nature. So if you bring that little bit of nature into your home, then it's all good.
You'd
be super zen in no time.
Super zen. I don't know if Jen would agree with that, but I try to be zen. But, you know, sometimes life's a bit stressful, isn't it?
But yeah, actually, you know, it's probably a good time to say how we're doing. I mean, this episode this week is going to be on the initial processing of being diagnosed with fertility issues and kind of how you deal with that, what people do go through and what we went through as well. But like I said, before we do that, let's do our usual check-in. So how are you doing, Kieran?
Yeah, well, I'm good, man. Family's good. Yeah, like external family's been a bit up and down, but that's life, isn't it? Like you just kind of crack on with things. But generally, yeah, life's good, mate. I can't complain at all. I've got a busy weekend coming up. We've got Christmas season starts, doesn't it? So I think on Saturday, it's like the busiest Saturday the Hanningtons have ever had. Enya is off to Disney on Ice with her auntie and Jen. I'll be at work. Sebi is at a friend's. And then I pick Sebi up after work. He goes to his Christmas rugby party. And once he's finished that, I drop him home, Jen's home, and I go to my party. So it's a busy Saturday. But apart from that, apart from just being a bit busy, it's all good, man. How about you?
Yeah, good. Usual kind of seasonal illnesses floating about, etc. Yeah. But, I mean, when we last recorded, which has gone out for episode 3 today, actually, I remember saying that I'd kind of let exercise drift a little bit because we've been so busy since the launch of the pod, but in the last couple of weeks I've got that back on track, which is good.
Nice.
It always makes me feel so much better when I'm doing that. Went out for a surf this morning and obviously sent you a picture when you were working.
I'm a bit jealous, mate. Well, I had mixed emotions over that picture. Part of me was like wanted to be there and part of me wanted to throw my phone out the window in jealousy.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, It's getting a bit colder now. It's the very end of November. It's December this week, isn't it? And
yes,
it's getting chilly. My little man has now just popped back out finally. took a few hours.
It went a bit
that
nippy,
far
mate.
Back up. Yeah.
Well, they say it's good. Cold exposure is good for fertility levels, mate. Like just jump in the cold, see what happens. A bit extreme, like that.
Yeah. Well, actually, funnily enough, I bought an ice bath the other day and that arrives tomorrow.
Ah, sweet. Yeah. That'd be cool.
It's funny, actually. I heard a saying or something. I think this could probably fit for many things, but it says, how do you know if someone does cold exposure? Because they tell you they do cold exposure. Yeah. So I'm determined that when my ice bath arrives, not to be that guy. But
yeah, I want to see pictures on Instagram, mate.
To be fair, I would be doing myself a disservice if I didn't do at least one post about it, because, as you said, it is known to be good for sperm health. It's, but actually, I started doing cold showers during my infertility years, like when I was in the pit, essentially, and it's one of many tools that actually saw me come out the bottom of it and start changing who I was. And I'm such a big fan of it for what it did. And there's lots of proven benefits for the physical health and for the mental health. So I think it's definitely something which I am going to talk about more in the future. Perhaps you do an episode live from your jungle. I'll do one live from the ice bath, see how long I can stay.
Do you know, it's because we've never talked about this, but I did the same. Like, I took to the cold and it helped me get out of the rut that I was in. You know, it was the time of on social media when like Wim Hof was really kind of big, and the breathing exercises and everything like that. And we used to go to Scotland like regularly. My friend, his mum had a house up there, and near it was like a river, but in the river there was like a big eddy where you could just kind of get in. It was like a pool. So I thought I'd just try it there once. And then I started to expose in cold showers, and it was amazing. Like, the only way I can describe it is when your head is so busy, you get in a cold shower, there's only one thing you're thinking about, and that's the cold.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I had the same, I've forgotten what the song was. I've got it on my phone, but I had one song that I would listen to, and I knew that if I listened to that song, I'd done 4 minutes.
Decent.
I got up to like 4 or 5 minutes, and it was like comfortable. It was no longer like freezing cold. And then I started filling the bath, and Jim was like, what are you doing? I started putting ice in the bath. But yeah, man, cold plunging, it's a lot to be said. Both for your fertility and your mental health, you know.
Yeah, you're right, man. I started around the same time because of Wim Hof, and it all just took off, really, didn't it? But for me, hopefully that there was a lot of physical benefits. I certainly didn't have one on my sperm or any sperm, but mentally it helped me loads. And again, it all just started from the shower, and anyone can do this, and this is perhaps a good takeaway, but I literally started it on at the end of the shower. So I have my normal shower, and then at the end of the shower, just bang it all the way to cold. None of this like kind of drip feeding, cold, natural, all the way in. And the first time I did it, I just did it for 10 seconds. The next day, 20, 30. And then it got to the point where my minimum buy-in, I wouldn't do less than 2 minutes.
Yeah.
That was the absolute minimum buy-in. But what I would often do, similar to what you said, if I was listening to music and I had like, I'd often have shuffle on, I'd wait for the point where a new song's going to start and bang it on cold and do it for the entirety of that song, no matter what it was. So, you know, you're hoping it's not going to be something like Champagne Supernova, which is like, 7 minutes long, wasn't it?
But it's, you know, the long edition of Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses, minutes. It's an amazing thing. Like, there's talk about how it calluses the mind, like it strengthens your brain because you know you've got to prepare yourself to do something that's going to be uncomfortable. It's fascinating because today's world's so comfortable. Like, when you actually put yourself in that situation, it can really test you. But we can talk for ages for that, couldn't we?
Yeah, exactly.
That would definitely be maybe a face-to-face. We'll have to film it. We'll do a pod or a mini pod from two ice baths one day.
Absolutely. I could talk about this.
The quickest pod we'll ever do.
Yeah, exactly. But I could talk about it for the whole episode. But, you know, there's a quick takeaway for anyone that is listening. To the fact that we've both done it, we've never actually talked about that before, which is really interesting, but we both did it. And you can do it simply with a shower. Do it first thing in the morning. Do something hard that you don't want to do. And trust me, no matter how long I did it for, as in like period of time over, you know, weeks and months. I'm not talking about time in the shower, but every single day when I went to do it, I never wanted to do it. I never got more used to it to say, oh yeah, I can't wait to do that. And then all the time I would start making these little excuses for myself not to do it. And then the moment I did that, I was like, well, you're in now, because yeah, that's that self-doubt and the self-talk kicking in. I was like, it's non-negotiable, I'm doing it. And if you start your day by doing something like that and getting those quick wins, then it just really sets the tone for the rest of the day, kind of getting stuff done and knowing yep. that you're like, right, well, I've done that first thing in the morning in the winter. I've done it when I've been looking out the window at snow.
Yeah.
And you think, right, everything else is going to be easier from now.
And it's amazing. Like, there's so many like changes that happen to your body in terms of like your skin gets better. You naturally feel more positive. Like you said, you're more willing to try those more difficult things. Like, it's fascinating. People just need to try it and let us know how they get on with it. Obviously, do it in a safe situation. Don't just kind of chuck yourself in where there's no one around and do an ice bath in a block of ice. Don't do stuff like that. But try a cold shower where you just turn it at the end and kind of face that fear, because, you know, life's full of them, challenges.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, we better move on. Otherwise, keep talking about cold water. But let's get into today's episode then.
So today is all about the initial processing, like what we go through, isn't it? Like when you initially find out, you know, you're given that result that we've talked about. We talked about last week about how it kind of changed both our lives. We spoke about it in our own stories. But actually, what's the process you go through? Now, you know, we talked before we came on here about how, you know, what you do with your coaching. You're a lot more informed on this than I do. I've experienced it and I can tell you kind of what I went through. But, you know, from a professional point of view, you're much in a much better place to explain this to us, mate. So can you briefly do that? What would that initial feeling be? And we've talked about it before, those stages that you can go through and that they're not consistent. You can go back and forth, but can you go into a bit of detail about that, buddy?
Well, absolutely. I think, what you've talked about, the stages, like that essentially is stages of grief. And classically, in no particular order, for the first four is denial, blame, anger, depression. And then the fifth one being acceptance. But actually, you know, there's a lot more to it. There's more than just five stages. Of course there is. And ultimately, I found myself from the very outset, from that first phone call, in a state of shock. And I think that's probably one that a lot of people do experience as well, is that kind of feeling that you're not really present when you're being told something and feel like you're a fly on the wall, or it's like an out-of-body experience, because quite simply, it is a life-changing situation. It's life-changing in terms of everything that you've ever considered in the past. Moving forward, it is going to be different. And it's a life-changing diagnosis. So yeah, absolutely. I was probably in shock for the best part of, well, it's hard to kind of date it, but more than a day, like, you know, for days, maybe weeks, just not really processing what was going on, because yeah, that, you know, there was denial with that as well, kind of thinking, no, not me. And yeah. But there's a lot of numbness that comes with that as well, and fear, and because it is a big unknown, it's huge, and you kind of go into this new world of fertility, and you hope that it's going to be a quick in and out, so to speak, and that you'll go, you'll have some initial diagnosis, and that they'll give you something, whether it's supplements or advice, that you'll just come be almost discharged quickly. And don't get wrong, that may well happen for some, but unfortunately, if there's something more afoot, like in my case, for example, or our case, you know, it's something then that drags you down for years. And what is really key is, like you said, the process isn't linear. It's not like you just float from stage to stage and suddenly you're kind of moving out of that initial shock and panic into some sort of denial and, oh, okay, and then labeling it, going, oh, I know where I am now. But it's not like that at all. You just, it's so complex. And
if only it was like that,
yeah,
it'd be a lot easier to process.
Well, absolutely. If you could get these kind of clear, defined time periods of like, okay, oh, I just have to get through this next month of denial, and then I can move swiftly into blame. It's you can make it all a lot easier, but unfortunately, that's it's not like that. There's a lot of loneliness and isolation, and that is where I found myself for probably the longest time out of everything that I went through, actually. And that is, like you mentioned about, like, having spoken to other guys and always, like, you know, constantly speaking to other chaps, that is echoed actually a lot. It's that loneliness out of really feeling that it's just you, and obviously this is what we're here for, to really get the message out that it really isn't. It really isn't. But it feels like the loneliest place in the world, which we've both spoken about in kind of when we went into detail about our stories, our journeys. We had to get it in there. Slightly longer today. Yeah, we're getting better.
It was 15 minutes this time,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah. We were 10 minutes before.
No, yeah. You know, it's amazing because, like I said, I'm not heavily read up on, like, you know, the stages of process, process stages, like you've just explained, but it's exactly how I explained it without even knowing what I was going through, was that initial kind of denial. It's not me. It was really strong. Like, it's not me. Like, it can't be me. They've got it wrong. These doctors who have all these medical years under their belts have got it wrong. And me, the PE teacher from South, knows better. You know, and what I know now is that was me protecting myself from possibly the inevitable of what I had to face. My body kind of went into, or my mind went into, like, protection mode. And then when that door started to break down in my head, that's kind of when I experienced a bit of shock. I kind of went into a completely different, like, process where I started to freeze and not be able to interact in life like you would do if something had happened and you suddenly shocked, you know. It's just really interesting, like, people that I've spoken to have said exactly the same thing, that denial comes first. And it's not a linear path. It's not at all, because I found, like we were speaking about last episode, it was almost like every time I went for a semen analysis, I would change where I was in that kind of state of processing. I'd almost backtrack a bit because I knew it was coming again. Really challenging stuff. But through help and through many years, it was years, wasn't it, that, you know, I went through it. I was able to get to the point of acceptance, or majority acceptance. I talk now quite openly about, I'm still processing stuff. You know, we've had conversations off the mic, mate, and it's obvious that we're probably both are. You know, I mean, you're still processing that, still figuring out where you are and your identity as an infertile man, or, you know, do you get what I mean? Like, that kind of picture of where you are. But it's something that anyone listening needs to understand, that it takes time, and everyone's different. You do have people that kind of will maybe process it quicker, and other people who just take longer, like I did. You know, I think if you look at our two stories, you definitely processed things a lot quicker than I did. But that doesn't matter, as long as you kind of at some point begin to make those develop in those stages and work towards that acceptance. But it's individual, man.
Yeah, that is so important. Like, we're all in our own race. There isn't, we're not comparing ourselves against others, which is hard to do, because when you're sat there and you're in the situation and you're seeing your friends, colleagues, family all around you getting pregnant, it can be hard not to compare yourselves to them. But it's important. I'd say that the most important thing is to not bury it, to not just suppress what you're feeling. because that is not going to serve you in the long term. Like you just said, we are still dealing with this down the line. We're both now proud fathers, but we're still living with this and dealing with it, but we're in a different place, but it will always be a part of us. It's like, say you've got a tub of white paint and there's a drop of red goes in it. Yeah. That white paint, that's us. That changes forever. That color will never be able to come out. Yeah, it's there and it will dilute more over time, etc. But it will always be there. And you know, when you start moving towards acceptance, like we've both spoken about, it's not just accepting the situation, that what's happened to you. It's also accepting the future and knowing that, like I just said, you know, that it's always going to be part of you. But accepting that you're a new version of yourself, however that looks, and what I find is key, is making that new version of yourself a better version, because you don't want to be going back. Like, use it, leverage it if you can to really start to push on. Like we talked about, you know, you start experimenting with new things like cold showers and becoming more resilient, more disciplined, and it becomes like a scar, and you can, because you can't heal from a wound, but you can heal from a scar, you know, and that's where you start to then really push on, and that is down the line, you know, there's no shortcut to it, and the key here is to, like I said, not to suppress what you're going through, and to talk. There are people out there now to talk to, who have been through it, who get it, some of which we'll come on to later. But that, for me as well, having that there, certainly for me, would have even further shortcutted what I was going through, by having that ability and that place to air and vent. Certainly would have been doing a lot of venting at times.
Yeah.
That would have really pushed me forward quicker, because I was reverberating in my own head all the time, because there was no one out there to talk to. And that kept me down for a lot longer than what I needed to be, essentially.
Do you know, I think it's really important that people understand there's a difference. When we talk about venting, there's a difference between like moaning and verbally processing things. Mm. Like you can moan about things like everyday lives, everyday like life issues, but actually, like, we're inbuilt as social animals to talk to each other. And, you know, if you start verbalizing how you're feeling and this has affected you, and, you know, you're not having a moan, what you're doing is you're processing externally, and people, you're using other people to kind of help assist you with that. Like when I went through my counseling, my counselor didn't give me like the magic wand. She let me talk. She let me talk and process it myself. And over those 6 weeks, it was like, oh shit. This, and then like it was like all the puzzles, pieces of the puzzle were coming together. But you know, any guy that's listening needs to know, and any woman as well, it's okay to take the knee if you're struggling. Stop, you know, take that knee, take your time to pull yourself together. But I always say it's what you do when you're on your knees. You know, do you choose to sit there, or do you figure out a way how you can get back up and carry on down the processing line? You know. Which can be incredibly tough, but things like the cold showers can help you do that. You know, there were several times when I explained or described it to Jen as feeling like I was laying flat on the floor and I couldn't get up. Like I got to a stage where I was done. Like I just can't do this anymore. And I'd lay there for a bit in terms of in my life. It would be a few weeks where I didn't make any progress, but then something good would happen. Like, I started to have more positive results in my semen analysis. And suddenly, rather than being flat, I pulled myself up to one knee. Do you know what I mean? And before I knew it, I was slowly walking forward and able to process it. But it's okay to be like that, to kind of take some time to really process how, or figure out how you can move forward with your mental health. Because if you break your leg, you know, you don't stick a bandage on it and walk away. It's the same with mental health. You can't just cover it up. In the end, it will be figured out. And you know, finding out that you're infertile and that kind of shock, it's, you know, it's a smack straight in the mental health. There's no other way to put it, is there? It's a big blow. It's a big blow. Yeah. So.
Yeah, you make so many good points about, you know, like taking the knee when you need to, take the 8 count or the 9 count, for example, rest up and then go again and work out what you're going to do next time. And they say that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So,
yeah. It was Einstein that said that, wasn't it?
Yeah. Certainly someone more eloquent than me. I didn't even say results properly. I kind of stumbled on it. But
he said, if you do the same experiment 10,000 times, you're a fool. You should do it 10,000 times different and then you'll get the answer. It was something like that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. You know. Yeah, it's, you know, it's figuring out what's working for you, how build strengths, like you said, chalk up the wins, like, you know, make a big deal of them and say, okay, that's good. I've developed a new strength there and that's worked. That's helping me. That's making me progress and not clinging on to the pain, to the things that are really holding you back. But it's like we've both said, it's important to air those things out because however that is, whether that's talking to other people or what I found really useful was actually writing stuff down because ultimately, no matter what you're doing, you're getting out of your head and that's where you need to get out of because you won't find the answers there.
Yeah.
So,
you know, you get trapped in your own head. It could be a really dangerous place, lonely place, you know, and definitely what I found out.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, what this kind of leads us on to really is why aren't men talking about it? Why has it been such a topic of shame and secrecy for so long?
I think there's several reasons for it. I think society's views on everything hasn't helped, has it? Like, there's this image of what a man should be. I remember distinctly, growing up, thinking that men had to be a certain way. You have to be tough. You don't show your kind of, incorrectly, we call it the feminine side, don't we? When actually, no, it's not. It's just part of being human. And that's probably like the biggest barrier in my mind. If society had a different view of what a man was, we wouldn't be needing to have all these conversations because those discussions would have already been had. It's just something that when you're brought up in it, it's hard to kind of suddenly change that, isn't it? That mindset.
And often that's what's passed down to us from our like parents' generation and grandparents as well. And that's not to put any blame on them at all because we are now, in this era now, we are more well-informed. We have access to the whole world. The world has become a smaller place. We have access to it in our pockets with our phones, but also we're getting out and we're seeing other cultures a lot more because of the prevalence of cheap travel. And like how we were raised previously was very much more localized. And for example, grandparents' generation, certainly at my age, they would have been war and post-war generation. Yeah. So, you know, very hardened, went through, you know, a lot. And then they are then passing that on to my parents who are certainly in my family more kind of manual worker based, and it was that men were the providers. Men were out earning and providing, and then so that's kind of what we're faced with is that what is now. Let's be right. Is that's outdated now?
Yeah,
because
the
world has changed a lot, but it's also that. But there is also that we're not going to sit here and say that men shouldn't be men because there's a place for masculinity, but
100%.
There's a new type of masculinity and a lot of that is being strong, but also admitting that you can show weaknesses as well. Because previously that wouldn't have happened. And look where that's got us with the rates of male suicide and people trying to bury their weaknesses and their pain in the bottom of a pint. It doesn't work. And that's been proven and borne out for decades, constantly, over and over again, like a repeating pattern. And now we're at the point where there is such a growing conversation in the world of, like you said, mental health, for example, one of which fertility definitely sits well in.
My perception of what I should be as a man is completely different to what it was when I started this journey. the only way I can describe it, or I really thought about it once, and it's like, if you have a dog, right? If you say you've got a Doberman dog, and it's lovely, and it's kind of the pet of the household, and everyone adores it. When the time's right, that dog will act defensive for the family. Yeah, no one's saying that dog's, you know, still not a dog, you know, or acting like how it should. So society kind of accepts that something that, you know, for example, like I said, a Doberman, that they're kind of bred to protect, but they can still be affectionate. They can still be everything. And the world kind of accepts that. But for a man, it's kind of, well, you can't show affection. You know, yeah. That's ridiculous. Like my, I kind of think about wearing different hats at different times. You know, like if you're a manager, you know, you manage people, there'd be times when you need to be sensitive. There's also times you need to be firm, you know, and it's the same with the children. There's times where, you know, I have to be dad. And there's sometimes where with Sebby, I can be his best mate. And then if someone came into our house, I'm going to be the protector, you know, but they don't, they've never seen that. I don't want them to see it. You know, it's okay to be everything, but you've got to play the role appropriately in the right time. Like the dog.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But society kind of has painted a different picture. And I do firmly believe it's breaking down. Like that picture is breaking down. Men, you know, our generation, I still think we're a rarity about guys that talk about their feelings. I don't think many of my mates will openly. It's kind of, they always just brush it off. But the next generation that's coming up, the youngsters now, a lot more open to it, lot more open to it, which is good. But we need to make sure as a society, we don't flip the other way. Like, men, you can still be a man. You can still stand your ground and, you know, protect when you need to protect. But there's so many more, you know, strings to the bow now as a dad, as a man. That's just my perception. That's my view.
I think you've nailed it, and there's not really any point in me like going on anymore because you've hit it. That you've hit the nail on the head, mate. Is that the opposite? It's knowing that we can be strong and weak, brave and vulnerable, for example. And like you said, again, it's perfect, but I've actually got a funny little anecdote about it, but knowing when that time is right. I was a guest on Sarah Banks, a female fertility coach. I was a guest on her podcast, and we were recording, and I knew I was home alone, but I also knew I had the back door wide open, you know, live in a safe village, but suddenly I could hear something in my house.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, hang on, Sarah. I think someone's in my house. I need to, like, 2 seconds. I shot off, came back, and I was like, oh, it's the window cleaner.
Yeah.
But I was like, I jokingly said, I was like, you know, I'm on this podcast talking about infertility, talking about, you know, emotions and mental health and stuff. And then I've come back and I said, oh, sorry about that. I literally thought I was going to have to bring the violence. and my adrenaline was so high. And I was like, right, okay, yeah, sorry about that. Let's go. You can edit that bit out. And she was like, oh, yeah, I don't have to do that. I'll have to stay in. But, you know, it's showing that, that's a funny anecdote. But essentially what you're trying to say is I'm having a really deep and a meaningful conversation, and then next minute I thought I was literally going to have to go and fight someone. Next second.
Yeah, but that's a lot of people will disagree, but that's how I see like my job as a man in my house. Like, I can be that caring guy. I can be the one that rolls on the floor and giggles and, you know, messes around and is thoughtful about his wife, thinks of his children. But at the same time, at a flick of a hat, I can do what I need to do to make sure they're safe.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
We're not talking about, like, extreme masculinity and, like, all that kind of stuff. We're talking about just being a man and looking after your world. That's all it is. And what's really interesting is when I was making notes for this episode, I kind of wrote down like talking about this And there's been times when I was at my lowest that Jen had to step in and be the protector because I couldn't protect myself because I was so low. And that's all right as well.
Yeah,
like, that's absolutely, absolutely fine.
But that's, you know, part of the reason why I was able to, because I had to do the same. I had to take that step back, and Jenna had to step in and took a lot on and bore the brunt for both of us during times. But that's actually what helped me reform my identity as a man, because I was able to realize that it wasn't always on me, which I was, because I was putting myself under undue pressure, and I was going to break. I was breaking. But what I'll do is breaking down what we said is those outdated stereotypes of what we should be, and reforming it and realizing that actually what makes me strong is so much more.
Yeah. Yeah. There will be guys that listen to this that are at that point of they still haven't given in on that yet. And like, mark my words, lads, like, let your partner take the reins every now and then in terms of just looking after you. And it will enable you to really kind of process things. You know, we've talked about process a lot, but it will just take that strain off of you and change your perception, one, of your relationship with your partner, and two, your kind of perception of you in the world. It changed completely for me when I let that guard down. And it was definitely probably the first step to me really accepting my new identity as a man. When that guard went down, the guard went down, and I was then able to talk.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you can rebuild that guard in the new way, the way you want to. And you know, you can retreat to it like an inner citadel. You know, that's your strong point, but you can step out when you need to and step back and survey it and be like, actually, no, that needs a little bit of rebuilding there, and just identify stuff and address stuff. But it's, but yeah, ultimately that is what we're faced with. And I think not just fertility stuff, but across the board with men, like, with still, you know, the conversation for mental health is increasing massively and going in the right direction, but probably a bit slower than what we can really do with. But that's what we're battling against across the board, because there are still so many people who buy into that. And that's part of the real fear factor that prevented me from putting myself out there earlier. Actually, it took me 8 months from deciding I was going to share my story to actually doing it. And it's a leap of faith, because you think that of all those people who we essentially are talking about, and the previous us and the previous generations, that they're going to shun me and reject me and I'm putting myself on offer. But actually the real strength is actually by putting ourselves out there, being vulnerable you know, not how few people could do that. And it just shows the real strength in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and like, I touched on it earlier, but me and Jen have a better relationship since I've kind of dropped that kind of tough man. And, you know, she loves it when I sit there and talk to her. And actually, she knows where I stand on certain things and how I'm feeling about certain things. And it just makes everything so much easier. Being able to talk and be that softer version of yourself without, you know, jeopardizing what you can be if you need to be, you know.
Yeah. It's not a compromise. You don't lose.
You gave
any part of yourself. Yeah, you're just adding. You're adding more strings to your bow and more depth. And it's, so that's probably what I would say is, like, you know, my main advice to anyone is that you really are not compromising if you're becoming more open, more in tune with who you need to be. And it often takes such a big thing to make you realize that. But if we can get the message out there that people can change at any point, then we'll all become the better for it.
100%. You're never too old to change. You know, you're never too, you know, traumatized or, you know, I hate the word, but damaged, you know. You can kind of always rebuild yourself and become a better version. But it takes courage to do that. It takes bravery to do that. And I can't remember. I was listening to a podcast. Which one was it? I really can't remember, but we talked about, you know, being brave. And actually, what does bravery feel like? It feels fucking horrendous. No one stands there and goes, I'm brave. You know, it's not like bloody gladiator. It's not like that. You know, there's a lot of anxiety involved. There's fear involved. There's, you know, self-challenge involved. But when you get to the end, you've changed as an individual.
Yeah.
So if you think that people will be, oh, well, I'm not brave. But if you're facing it, that's bravery. You're doing it. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah. Like any facing any big decision or like having to be brave for anything, essentially what you're doing, you're reaching the ceiling of where you are. And then you push through it, and then that ceiling becomes your ground level of the next you, the next phase, because you've shown that you can do it. And then that's your baseline then. And at each time, you keep shattering it, and that becomes your proof that you can do it, and you keep moving on, and you're just going up and up, and you're elevating as a person and as a man. And I know that the version of myself now compared to that the one that went into the diagnosis in early 2018, I'm like many, many floors above.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about it last week about when you gave that sample over and it didn't have anything in it. The Sean now would probably act completely different in that situation, and because of what you've learned. And that shows growth, doesn't it? It's a fact of being comfortable with what's happened and what, you know, taking control of what a very difficult situation it can be.
Yeah.
But I suppose
go on, mate.
I was just going to say, we should move on to kind of think, looking at.
I think that's probably what I was about to do anyway. Because I was going to say, not only are we dealing with the kind of that gender stereotype of what man should be, but also then you move into the kind of the education that we've receiving, for example, about sex education and also.
Yeah.
Around like in the fertility world, more so in the kind of the general practitioner world of your average doctor, for example, not bashing them at all, because of course,
they're doing the titles
there. Oh yeah, absolutely. But they're general practitioners, but because the education is always saying that it's easy to get pregnant and should be, and it was sex education school was all about prevention and like practicing putting condoms on or whatever. And
yeah, do you remember doing that? Bananas and
crap. I think cucumbers. I'm not even joking, but must be.
Well, they must be gifted where you're from, mate. Like, weird little bananas. Like.
Honestly, I don't know. Maybe that is just my the memory changing, but it's and cucumbers.
And everyone goes, oh, that's mine. That is me.
But you know, you're led to believe that if you get naked near the opposite sex, then there's a risk you're going to get pregnant. And that kind of, that myth then seems to transcend into the kind of less specialized medicine where men have often been sidelined when it comes to fertility. And it's always been deemed to be more of a female issue. And that's part of the reason why there's such little education out there about male factor infertility.
Yeah.
And like you know, we've said it. You said it in your episode. You were years down the line of testing before you were even looked at.
Yeah. It was getting on to 2 years before they looked at me. It's mad. It's absolutely mad. And like the research isn't there yet. Like it's just kicking off, I think. Like, you know, you and me have discussed this. The fact that they've almost done everything they can for females now. Like they know they've got as much knowledge as they can currently get. And it's almost as if they flip the coin over and go, oh, there's two sides. They've started moving, developing the research in regards male fertility, which is actually probably a lot harder to get hold of because you've got a whole kind of gender that doesn't want to engage in it.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't want to engage in it at all. Going back to education, obviously, you know, I work in education and it's in PSHE lessons, like it's briefly covered. I mean, very briefly, but it's still very heavily female orientated. I mean, you've got like 15, 16-year-old boys learning about the menstrual cycle and the menopause. And even though that's important because they need to know what's going on with their wives or their partners when they get older, but there's very little about them, you know. So I've been talking to the sixth formers and the fifth form, which is year 11 at our school. I've done several talks. And after every talk, I get a handful of the guys, lads coming up, and they're really thankful. Like, we didn't know that. We didn't know this. And they're just thankful that someone's taken their time to talk to them and given a real life experience. You know, when I remember the first one I did, I was really nervous. I didn't know how it was going to be taken. But it's this new generation that are completely like open to anything. And it needs to be built in more. Like, I'd love to do more schools, go around and talk to people. You know, these young lads and the girls that, you know, statistically, some of them are going to have partners that have the same issue. They need to know how to support them. Why what's happened could have happened. But it's not there yet, mate. You know?
Yeah.
But it's really far behind.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's one step at a time. And what you've done there is showing actually that not only is it needed, but it's well received as well. And that shows actually that's a real compliment to the next generation coming up in that they are listening and there's no stupid remarks or sniggers in the background and not just sat there looking at their phones or whatever. They are listening because they know it impacts them, and they're more worldly wise than what we were at their age.
Yeah, I think they're a lot more aware of, say, their sexual health and things like that than I was at that age. Didn't have a clue. I knew what you kind of had to do, but I think social media's got a big part of it.
Yeah, you know, still figuring out roughly what to do.
Yeah, roughly, yeah. Still got my cucumber walking around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that social media's played a big part in it. And it's a positive part about it.
Mm.
You know, there are negative parts in terms of, like, you know, exposure to pornography and things like that. They have an unreal expectation of what some of them do anyway, of what sex and relationships should be like.
Yeah.
But actually, they're eager to learn, the majority. Hopefully in time, that will change. You know, but I think we're at the start of that journey. It's an exciting journey in terms of, you know, education, specifically around male fertility and research.
Yeah, yeah, that then shifts the tide and then makes everything easier. To draw it back to what the episode's about, that initial processing, of course, it's always going to be life-changing and will always be a shock. But if the conversation's been had many times before and people are more aware that testing starts earlier, which then gives better potential for prevention and different outcomes,
yeah,
of just having that awareness earlier and not like me, just assuming and just carrying on going on the next lad's holiday and looking for the next beer. It's all about, just like you were saying about the youngsters, just being more aware. And that's awesome because it shows actually that those ones in that group who are maybe be unfortunate enough to experience this, they've already got it in the back of their mind that it could be an issue. And what do I do if I get there? What preventions and alternative routes are out there for me? So, yeah, encouraging times.
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing that really does concern me is, I think we could do a whole episode on this. I'd like to, you know, maybe in series two or three, is the amount of youngsters now, like, because being fit and healthy is a big part of the mainstream, but they're putting a lot of things in their bodies as well, like things like pre-workouts, things like proteins. You know, the older guys are, you know, early 20s, like steroids, it's common use now in the gyms. It always was, but it's become a mainstream thing now. It's all over, once again, social media. So it's educating young lads and stuff like that. Like, it's vital. That should be part of their PSHE and part of their kind of life skill development. You know, what is a good diet? Even though it is discussed, but it's briefly discussed, isn't it? Why do I want a healthy diet? Well, actually, it has a big impact on your fertility, like we spoke last week. One of the bigger things that I think I wish I'd had is where to go. Well, support was actually out there. And that kind of moves us on to that support discussion, because you've said it, I've said it, the hundreds of, or probably thousands of people we have spoken to between that, you know, between the two of us at some point, have said how lonely it is. Like, where do you go? Who do you speak to?
Yeah, no, exactly. And like we've both said, is that when we were going through it, there was no one. So thankfully, there now is, you know, we are doing our bit, but we're just part of, thankfully now, a group of people that are. And if that just keeps snowballing, then like this will just become normalized. And that's what where we're all pushing towards and aiming for. So there's, you know, like the testing boys, with you know Ian very well from your time up at Everest.
Yeah. I mean, their podcast, great, really factual, really kind of informative. You know, like you learn a lot from it. And then there's people like you know, like Kevin Button with his little Eminem show. Like, it's alive. It's quite good in terms of just getting in the moment discussion about what's going on. It's quite free flowing, isn't it? And then there's things like the infertility group, which is got me kind of really rolling on this kind of path. Like, when I found the infertility group, which is run by Fertility Network UK, Jim was already pregnant with Enya, but I had so many unanswered questions, and I'd been on my own on this journey for so long. It was just nice to be in a group where I could have discussions with other guys going through it. And that's like 11 years into my journey before I found that.
Yeah.
Doing fantastic work all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like that support group is awesome. And it just shows the strength and what's needed, but like into coming together as men and discussing something so impactful, but doing it as part of a community, it's really good. And I think that there's definitely there's more to be done across the board, and like perhaps you know, we could all come together and do something, because there are, like, you know, just so you've mentioned Kev, Toby Trice, Frank Fallon, Alex, I don't even know his surname, Pursuing Fatherhood, this is Instagram, but across the pond over in America, he's been doing it now for a few years, putting himself out there. So
I mean, if we're open and honest, there's not loads, but
developing. Probably, yeah, exactly. Maybe 10 tops.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to think of off the top of my head. Did I say Gareth?
Gareth
Landy. Yeah, that's the thing. You know, is already starting to dry up. Come on,
but it's one of those things. I think it'd be great to get everyone together at some point.
Yeah,
and do like a big one, either a big meetup where we can kind of all come together and invite people, or we all come together and do like one big massive podcast of a big group discussion. I mean, that's a real possibility, and something that I think would only strengthen, one, our connections, which needs to be strengthened, and kind of the distance our voice is traveling, because, you know, we're picking up followers on this podcast. Test Him have followers. People like Kevin, you know, everyone's got followers. So it's about spreading that as far as and as wide as we can. So maybe I'll have to get in, send in some emails, mate.
Yeah, definitely. Like the strength there is coming together and increasing that number. And actually, what I was going to say was, we've had loads of chaps reach out to us and offer to come on the podcast as well.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome, isn't it? These are people who haven't openly shared, who are realizing how important it is, and that they want to play their part in getting that the story out there and their voice out there. So, like, they're all people that will be on. Absolutely, there's no question about it. And how empowering is that to know that this there's just the number is growing. People who want to talk and will be talking.
Well, I think it's that it comes down to like the power of a real life story is really powerful. You know, we could have 100 different guests on, and there will be 100 different stories. Yes, it's to do with infertility. but they'll tell their story differently. And for each of those individuals, there'll be someone out there going, that's me. That's what I went through. So it's just about spreading that word, isn't it, mate? I do know, I think we should look at maybe doing a series of that, just real life stories later down the line. Because I think, you know, there's a massive need for it. It's almost creating that culture of talk, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. We're there. We're doing the right thing. We've made the, you know, made the start, and this is where it really progresses on from.
Yeah, definitely. I've had a great chat tonight, mate. I think it's gone,
as always,
really well, man.
It's
always good to talk to you. I think we've got still so much to discuss. Like, we could do another whole hour on this.
Yeah.
I always think to myself, we get to the end, I'm like, my head's like, oh, could talk about that, could talk about this, could talk about that.
It's hard to rein it in, isn't it? Like, because obviously we start off with a topic, and it's like, but you could go off on so many tangents, and, you know, like, we're at danger of doing that at the beginning with the cold showers. but it all fits, and we have reasons for the fact that they were so good for us and the fact that we both do them, but let's not start open that can of worms again. But
it's just a piece of the puzzle, isn't it? A puzzle piece, and they all connect somehow. And also we did say we're going to try and keep it under an hour today, because it takes an hour to load once we finish this.
Yeah, exactly. Not to mention edit.
Edit.
Yeah. So, right. Well, next week, what are we talking about?
Next week, we're looking at the different pathways of fertility. So obviously, like, my pathway was ICSI treatment, and your pathway was donor, and there are others. And we're just going to kind of discuss those, and maybe what people can expect very briefly in each of those pathways. Because, you know, I put my hand up and say that in terms of donor treatment, I wouldn't know where to start with that. But you'll have, you've got loads of knowledge in that area. So it will help people that are maybe looking down two pathways and don't know which one they're going to be going down. But it will give them that little bit of information. So when they get to that door, they'll be a little bit more prepared. About what's to come.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that'll be a great discussion. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, because I essentially, probably like yourself, went into this world. I didn't know my arsehole from my ear hole.
And
suddenly getting thrown all these terms. So if we can pass on some of our learned experience and knowledge, then that'd be great, and help those who are in it now.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.